The hosts feel it would be a little unkind to present this podcast without just a word of friendly warning. We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein, a man of science who sought to create a man after his own image without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now's your chance to. Well, we've warned you.
Hello, and welcome once again to the Frankencast. I'm the mad scientist, Anthony Bowman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined as always by...
the discount version of Brian James, that is, Eric Velasquez. My pronouns are also he, him. do you remember that guy? He's one of those that guy actors?
Yeah, you're not wrong. Very similar vibe, for sure.
The Brian James we have at home. That's what I'm calling that character from now on.
Yeah, so, we figured this would be the appropriate transition to come back into Frankenstein after a little bit of a sidetrack last week.
I don't know what you're talking about. We've always been talking about Frankenstein, nothing else.
Right. Yeah, so this is Frankenstein versus the Mummy, which I had seen this a long time ago and kind of just forgotten about it. I totally didn't remember that this was Damien Leone, like... this guy is now huge from the Terrifier series, right. And this is the movie he made after he'd done the All Hallows, the like short films featuring Art the Clown as part of the anthology or whatever. This is before Terrifier 1. He made this Mummy movie, or this Frankenstein versus the Mummy movie.
And you can tell, though, because his DNA is all over it.
Yeah, there's just literally a lot of, like, weird gore bits where a lot of movies would have, like, a lot of other directors wouldn't have leaned into the gore in the spots that he did. Like, it's not necessary, but it does make it fun, and, it definitely, and that's the thing, is he started as, like, a special effects guy, you can definitely see that...
he's grown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's also, like, who are the guys who made Psycho Gorman?
Oh, what is it? Steven something? And I know he's in the same boat that he like.
Right, but you can tell like the difference in like how they've grown because the people from Psycho Gorman, they were special effects first, and you know, just like Damien, they transitioned into actually making the whole film.
Yeah,
but there's no story there for them. It's just what kind of cool shit can we throw up on the screen? Whereas Damien Leone has kind of leaned into the story. And to a degree, it seems like with his special effects, they're telling the story.
Absolutely, yeah. So. Yeah, and I mean, this movie is, I don't think it gets a lot of talk, which is weird since he's kind of got a very buzzy director right now. But, like, I think this is, I was impressed with, like, there is a pretty good story here. And, you know, because he's so good with the special effects, the monsters look good, like both Frankenstein and the Mummy. In fact, I would say
might be this, the best Frankenstein.
I think it's definitely the most like book accurate Frankenstein we've seen on film. Like, he's got like the long stringy black hair, and kind of like it's more like the Bernie Wrightson drawings. Like it's in that territory rather than like the Karloff style that's sort of the popularized version of the monster.
I like this version is a little bit of a scumbag, too. Because his brain comes from a scumbag.
absolutely, yeah.
Right. So here's the only reason I can see why, obviously, it's not picking up any steam, is because you could literally chop pretty much every scene in half, and you would still get where you're going. He lingers too long on everything.
Which I feel like that's like a new director kind of issue, you know, if like he hasn't learned to edit much yet, you know.
Cut your shit down. Kill your darlings.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into this thing. We're going to start off with a Mary Shelley quote. What was that exactly?
Thus strangely are our souls constructed, and by such slight ligaments are we bound to prosperity or ruin.
Right. So, and this kind of has a reference to both the mummy and, well, it talks about the soul, and that's basically the only reference to the mummy, other than that, yeah. Frankenstein, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So we get the discount Brian James lighting up a cigarette.
Yeah. We've got the two guys, they're meeting in this, like, dark facility. There's, like, a bunch of, like, glass bottles all scattered on the floor and, like, pill bottles and...
we're going to learn that this is eventually just an old building that's been condemned, mm-hmm. That Victor's using as his base of operations.
Yeah. And our other guy, it's a younger guy and an older guy. The younger guy, of course, is Victor, and the older guy, his name is Carter.
But don't they call him, like, Fred? Or is it friend that he's saying? Because this movie's fucking quiet, or at least the version I was watching.
Yeah, it is. The audio's not great, but yeah, I'm not sure if it is Fred. I'm guessing Carter is his last name, seems like what they mainly call. But, like, you know, of course, this is Victor is buying, you know, body parts from this guy, and they're, like, talking about, like, you know, if we see each other in public, we don't know each other. Don't even look my way and everything. They're trying to maintain their distance in public, and then we just cut to, you know, so we're seeing this really sketchy back alley kind of situation, and then we cut right to Victor again, and he is a professor. He's teaching the philosophy of medicine. You know, it's a very different look at this same guy. He's, you know, he's got his secret life and now his public facing life. He's very clean cut, and you know,
seems to be,
yeah.
And I like how we're pondering the nature of existence and creation, mm-hmm. all the while we're kind of getting intercut with scenes of him doing surgery, mm-hmm. on his future monster.
Yeah. So, he's talking about, like, you know, why do we die? Why do we age? Like, a doctor's job is to fight that, to counteract that, you know, with various cures and stuff. But, like, you know, what's the ultimate thing that's causing it? So, of course, this is, you know, Victor. This is... what his whole deal is like, we can't just cure disease, we have to cure death.
Right. Then we get another philosophical discussion about, you know, we then create gods, you know, to kind of explain other things. And he gets into a little bit of a discussion with a character, I believe his name is William.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Probably the quote of the movie, God is not a boundary, but an achievement. Or it is an achievement instead.
Yeah.
So... that's pretty solid.
Yeah, definitely.
And that puts you in Victor's headspace, right?
Absolutely.
That's the goal.
Yeah. And so then we cut from Victor's classroom to another classroom. We'll meet another professor. We don't get her name for a while, but it's Nyla.
Nyla Khalil. I don't know that they ever actually say Khalil, and they don't say Nyla till, like, the halfway point of the movie, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's like an archaeology professor, some sort of history professor, but she also just returned from Egypt where she was actually exploring Egyptian tombs. So she's kind of got like an Indiana Jones vibe, sort of, like, you know, she does like the real world stuff and then also the like academic stuff. And
she gets into a little bit of a fight with another kid who literally has no importance to this movie at all, or quote-unquote kid. The guy's probably like 26. Mm-hmm. But about the ancient alien philosophy of, you know, old, ancient people couldn't have built these things. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, and I really like that they spent a little bit of time, you know, she was like, yeah, all of this could have happened. Here's the explanations for how people could have moved these blocks. We've tested this. It works now. You know, it's definitely possible. And also, like, do you think so little of humankind that, like, you don't think we can achieve anything and that you want to ascribe all of our greatest things to aliens? It's
right. Well, because surely those people with extra melanin in their skin can't be smart enough to do the thing, right?
Right, yeah.
That's
definitely the subtext when it comes to a lot of this. Is
yeah, literally. If you hear ancient aliens... immediately just assume racist. Like, mm-hmm. I used to think it was just like a cute thing until I learned about some of the nefarious shit behind it.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of the condescending nature of it. Because, well, I don't want to get on too much of a side tangent, but there was on the Easter Island, you know, where they have the big, or Easter Island, where they have the big heads statues. They asked the people that lived on the island, hey, how did you get the stones here? And they said, oh, yeah, we walked them. We walked them there. And that's kind of literally what they did, was just kind of shift them side to side like it was walking. So, of course, the colonists or colonizers were like, no, these people are dumb. They think giant statues can walk.
Yeah.
Reading into subtext.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you know, definitely colonizers are never going to give any other peoples the benefit of the doubt. They're going to assume savage and dumb and, yeah. It's
sorry, that was my side tangent.
No, I mean, I think that's a, you know, definitely a part of a lot of mummy type stories is about this sort of like push and pull between these ancient cultures and white colonizer society now, you know, dragging mummies back to museums. And, you know, that's the curse, is that we're stealing artifacts from other cultures. And, you know, you know, that's definitely and I think that's why this scene is like integral to this, is it's about like, fuck you if you think that this is the case. Like,
right. Good on Damien Leone for being, I feel like he had an argument right before writing this with somebody. Yeah. Like, that motherfucker, I'll get him.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause this student comes across as a complete idiot and a shithead. Yeah. And it's great. But we go from that scene, I think, after class is dismissed, Nyla goes out in the hallway and bumps into Victor, and he has flowers. It seems like the deal is they maybe were starting to kind of, like, talk, you know, like, they weren't dating, but then she went on her trip, and the idea was that they're going to go on their first date now that she's returned, that they had sort of planned this in advance. I don't know how long she was gone. I would assume, a while for an expedition like this, but...
I feel like if you're on expedition, you're not going to be there for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But so they're excited to see each other again. And he's like, I heard you brought something back. And she's like, that's classified. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, come on.
Let's go check out this mummy, though.
Yeah. She doesn't try to keep it secret too long. She takes him to the lab, and, like, right away, like, she's like, hey, this is my friend Victor. And everybody's like, sure, bring him on in. It's fine. Like, the classified thing goes out the window real fast. And, of course, she shows him the mummy that they found that is more than 3,000 years old. And Victor is obviously very impressed to be able to see this.
Right, and I believe Professor Walton is the older doctor. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A nice little Frankenstein nod there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I do like how he tries to immediately recruit Victor. It's like, he's in a different field than you, man. He's a medical doctor, not a, like, archaeologist or anthropologist or anything like that.
Victor is like, wait, this like, where are his ears? Which I would have thought a bandaged mummy, you wouldn't be able to see their ears anyway. But they're like,
they don't bandage the head, though, you know?
Okay.
In this one version, I
don't
know.
But they're like, oh, yeah, his ears appear to, they were cut off. There's some sort of punishment before he was mummified. He was still alive when it happened. They cut off his ears, also his nose, and some other parts.
Other parts. I wonder what those could be.
Yeah.
That we mentioned the ears and the nose. But leave that off.
Right.
Oh, also, because we're talking about mummies and everybody loves the whole brain scooper thing, we're going to mention that a little bit too.
Yeah, we're going to see
that. I wonder
that,
if that's going to come back.
Right.
Yeah. That's Chekhov's brain scooper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's a lot of by the way, good on Damien Leone, because he has a lot of callbacks, but he goes there. Like, we're going to, if he lingers on something, he's going to show what it'll do later.
Yeah. And so then they talk about, there was also a scroll included in the sarcophagus or whatever that they were able to kind of read. And part of whatever this person did that led to them having their ears cut off and all this, it was some sort of punishment. And the scroll indicates that they were cursed to have their soul trapped inside this mummified body. Once, like, you know, Victor and Walton kind of talk about the information there and everything, Victor and Nyla head out.
We discover the Carter is the janitor of the school that they're teaching at.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, just super creepy, you know, mopping the floor in the hallway. Victor and Nyla like part ways, you know, they both got to go teach. So Nyla walks past Carter, and then Carter like looks Victor like dead in the eyes and like kind of like, you know, makes some like creepy face, like basically like
well, he does the tongue flick, right?
Yeah, he's sort of like objectifying Nyla at Victor's expense, like, you know, just doing stuff to like fuck with him, basically. And then we cut right
from the character for Carter.
Yeah, Carter just fucking sucks. Like, I mean, that's which obviously
even in monster form he doesn't get any better.
No. And in fact, right from this scene, we cut to another scene with Carter where he is like outside and he approaches like an unhoused man who's like kind of, you know, sitting on a curb eating a can of beans. And
well, I swear to God, he calls him like the unhoused man. He is called Bill.
Okay.
Right. And that's where I got Carter's first name was Fred.
Oh,
okay. I feel like they knew each other. And that maybe Carter was one time unhoused himself.
Gotcha.
And, you know, moved up or whatever way you want to say it.
Yeah, the way the Carter's definitely like they have like rapport pretty much right away. Like the guy shares some of his beans with Carter. He definitely seems to think Carter's in a similar situation to him. Right. And they talk
but
about
he does
like
note that he's a little bit cleaner than he should be.
Yeah. And Carter's like, why are you out here on the street? And he's like, well, you know, the shelters, I don't like the shelters. They don't let you keep your stuff there. And like, I have things that are valuable to me still. Like, you know, I may live on the street. I may, you know, but I still care about stuff. I have this blanket that belonged to my daughter and I want to keep those memories. And if the shelter won't let me do that.
Yeah. And I do like how Carter's like, well, if you have a daughter, like, why aren't you like living with her instead of being where you are. And I do like the nice little touch of there is more history because, you know, I'm going to call him Bill. Bill is, he's like, nope, I don't want to talk about that anymore. We're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which is, you know, we just get this one scene with this guy, but like a lot of movies would have just made him like a they wouldn't even have this conversation at all. Like, it doesn't matter. Right. He's not a character that matters, quote unquote. But like, I do appreciate that we kind of get a little bit of moment with this guy that he's got a complicated life. You know, he has things that he cares about. He's probably got a bad relationship with his daughter that may be a result of, you know, drugs or whatever. But he still cares about her. He's a real person with like, you know, good and bad qualities.
I'll say this is one of the scenes that goes on exactly the right length of time.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're kind of having this conversation or whatever. And Carter's like, well, you know, I'm in a better situation than I have been in the past. So I'd like to help you out. And the man's like, okay, what's going on? And then Carter pulls out a knife and stabs him, like guts him basically.
It's almost like he's going to recruit him to work at the university with him for a little
mm-hmm. bit. Yeah, that's kind of what it seemed like. But then, yeah, you know, obviously, this is, you know, Carter being hired by Victor to collect body parts. Here we are. But yeah, you know, it definitely makes this scene matter a little bit more that we've spent a few minutes with this guy and he's a real fleshed out character, even just from this one scene.
Even if we are only going to use his brains, use the man for his brains.
Yeah. So that's the end result. Carter, after he kills him, he, you know, starts like cutting open his skull. And, you know, I think we cut away after that, you know, we just get like the beginnings of him like sawing through the top of his head.
Right. So then we go into the date, which to a degree, like, I don't know if I'm putting more into this than there should be, but it's like almost a juxtaposition of, you know, we have people who a guy who's doing a bad thing, but it's a little bit more honest. It's not dressed up. It just is what it is versus the fancy date where Victor, you know, he's just as bad, honestly, as Carter, but he dresses everything up in a nice fashion.
Yeah. There's a lot of play with that, you know, like from the beginning, as we were saying, like we had the scene of him buying or like talking to Carter, making these plans, and then we go to him as the clean cut professor. And yeah, I think that Victor kind of living this dual life is a big part of this story. And I, you know, I think this version of Victor, it feels like he is maybe trying to be a better person than he actually is.
He is. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think this conversation with him and Nyla here, like, she's talking about, they're both talking about their work, and they're very passionate about what they're doing, and she's talking about the mummy and everything.
She just calls him a Satanist. Like, and also, though, I have issue with the Satanist thing for one reason. They're just edgy humanists. Just call yourself a humanist. That's what you are.
Yeah. Like, and she's definitely poking fun at him when she calls, because like they're talking about like, you know, this curse that's supposedly on this mummy, and he's like, but do you actually believe in curses? And she's like, what if I did? Like, would that be a deal breaker for you? And he's like, no, I'm just curious. And she's like, I know your type. You know, you're the scientist, the atheist, the Satanist, and just kind of, you know, you're too good for any sort of like beliefs outside of what you can see right in front of you. But I think there's something more. I don't know if the curse of the mummy exists, but I think I think life is more than just what we're seeing here in front of us.
Yep. And I do like how he says, you know, I just want to help people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you want accolades. Mm-hmm. You want recognition. That's what you want. And you know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, like, I think that's a normal thing for Victor to say, that, like, I have these grand, you know, visions of helping humanity and society and everything, but he's having to do everything secretly behind closed doors, you know, collecting illicit body parts. He's not doing this above board, and because he knows that this is for him more than it is for humanity.
Exactly. And because, like, honestly, if you were like, hey, I'm pretty sure I know how to bring people back, do you know how much money would get thrown at you?
Right.
Like, just for that. Now, don't get me wrong. The company would absolutely take away your rights to it, but you'd be rich off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think then we go from their date back to the lab where the mummy's being held, and Professor Walton's
fucking with it.
Yeah, he's examining it. Then he finds, like, you know, it's got, like, the arms kind of crossed or whatever, and, like, sort of underneath the arms on the torso of the mummy, there's a little medallion kind of, like, attached to the to the thing's chest, and he starts kind of trying to pry it up.
Right, then he gets a face full of gas from the gas trap that's in the mummy's chest.
Yeah, just the room just fills with smoke, and Walton falls unconscious.
By the way, I don't want you to know this, but I'm absolutely going to put a mummy in our next game that has a gas trap in the chest. It's perfect.
Yeah. So then we go, like, as Walton falls, we go back to Victor and Nyla. They're riding home from the date. They're continuing to talk about the curse. Nyla said
her grandpa and his team, like, suffer, quote unquote, from the curse.
Yeah. Her grandfather was also an archaeologist. He was on this expedition where everybody looted this tomb. They all took items that were supposedly cursed, and he did not. And then everybody else in his crew died within the year, and he lived. So, that sort of, like, it's a little bit of confirmation bias, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's something there that she's like, well, you know, it could be a curse, or, you know, it may not be, but, you know, that's it definitely seems to lend credence to the idea that a curse could be real.
Exactly. So then we cut back to Dr. Walton, who apparently suffered a bout of modern warfare or Call of Duty because he has tinnitus.
Yeah, we get the squealing and everything.
For that.
He kind of, like, is, you know, he gets up and is kind of trying to, like, wash up a little bit, like, get the stuff out of his eyes or whatever. And then he hears breathing, and it's like a raspy, creepy breath, you know. And he, like, turns back towards the mummy, and then you can tell Walton's, like, something's wrong, you know, he's, like, a little off.
Yeah.
And then the I forget the other guy's name, the sort of like other, there's like Walton and Nyla and then this other guy. He comes in with like coffee, and he's like, "What's up, Professor? You seem confused or something." And then he's like, "Wait, where did this medallion come from? Where did you find this?" And Walton's like, "Oh yeah, you know, it was attached to the mummy or whatever." And he's kind of like, "Oh, you know, this mean, you know," he starts like examining it, analyzing it or whatever, and Walton sneaks
up. Well, I like how he suggests, "Hey, you know, we don't have to tell anybody we found it. We could just make some money."
Yeah, and he gets the classic like instant punishment for being bad in a horror movie,
as the possessed doctor gets a scalpel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, Walton definitely still seen. Yeah, like you said, he's possessed. Like he's not himself, but he slits the guy's throat. Right. Blood erupts out of his neck and splatters on the mummy, and then is instantly absorbed and just gone. The mummy looks, you know, there's something very like vampiric about the way that it just instantly absorbs.
Yeah, in the reverse shot that they definitely didn't use to pump the blood out of the mummy.
Right.
But yeah. Actually, it looks pretty good. I mean,
yeah,
how
it
else
does.
Are you going to do that? You know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, and it's like, so yeah, there's definitely like, it's drinking blood to kind of like revitalize itself. And also, Walton kind of has like a Renfield vibe to him. Like, there's something very Dracula about this particular mummy.
There's a little Dracula in our mummy.
Right.
Sorry, and that sounded way wrong, but way worse than I intended it to.
And so then we go back to Victor and Nyla. They've arrived back at her house, and they're just like in the car, kind of still talking about the, you know, I had a great time, that kind of like date conversation stuff.
Yeah, but Victor's got to bring it down with the discussion about how his, I believe his mom died.
Yeah, yeah. This, he's further emphasizing, this is why I do the work that I do, that his mom killed herself when he was really young, and he was so, I guess it was just the two of them, and he was so young he didn't know what to do, and he just sat there with her dead body for 3 days until the police arrived. So I feel like
that is some trauma.
Yeah, some heavy trauma. And so he's like,
so
you know,
what are they gonna do though? They're gonna kiss about it.
Right. Yeah,
I feel like that's probably the most inappropriate thing aside from just having sex that they could have done, right?
Right. And that's like that pretty much leads, like it fades from them kissing to them in her bed.
Yeah, having sex.
And yeah, so we do get the sex scene, and it's,
hey, at least they had enough respect, or she had enough respect to let it, you know, just kind of linger there for a minute.
Right. And the sex scene is like surprisingly like chill and tasteful. It's like, it is sexy but not like porny or anything, like,
yeah. Once again, my only beef is it probably goes 30 seconds longer than it needs to.
Right. Yeah. And the next scene we see is Nyla asleep, and Victor kind of is like, you know, doing the like get out of bed as quietly as possible to not wake her.
He dips out.
Yeah. And
boy, that's a great thing to do.
Right. Yeah.
He's not going to hear about that later.
So then the next thing we see is Nyla arriving at school the next day. She's going into the lab and she doesn't see either of her colleagues. And you get like a moment where like, it seems like she hears something and is like kind of looking around. She goes over to the mummy. Like, did I hear her? I think you almost in the soundtrack hear heartbeats. It's very low. But you know, so she like kind of puts her head towards the mummy's chest, and then Walton pops into the room, and like we get a jump scare.
It's I don't know if I'd call it that. It's like a attempt at a jump scare. It's very slow.
Right. Yeah,
like it telegraphs itself a mile away.
Yeah. And she's like, Walton, something, it looks like someone has been tampering with the mummy. Like, the looks like the chest cavity has been opened. And
yeah, and where's that other guy? The other doctor that we had in for like a second.
Yeah. And then Walton kind of looks like he's like a little unsteady on his feet, like he's gonna like faint or something. And you know, so of course Nyla's like, oh, are you okay, Professor? And like kind of like is comforting him or whatever. And while they're like stepping away, we see crickets crawling out of the mummy's mouth she's distracted away from seeing that.
Are those crickets or locusts? I feel like locusts would be a appropriate thing.
That would make
probably
more
is
sense.
A cricket.
Yeah, crickets are a little easier to come by, probably. But yeah, yeah. I bet it's supposed to be a locust now that you say that. Yeah. And then we just cut to, like, later, Nyla is in the library doing research.
Okay. This kind of struck me as a little odd, right? Because don't get me wrong, she's a doctor. She would be able to do research. But computers exist in 2015. There is also the internet. So she's going to an old, like, old-style library, like mm-hmm. an actual physical library. And, like, she discovers this really old book.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, this is only there for her to discover the book for the plot.
Right. Absolutely, yeah. And it's like the book is, like, up too high. She can't reach it. But then Victor appears and, like, gets the book
down.
Can
we talk about the Tarantino thing that happens here, though? Because they linger on her feet.
Yeah, like, yeah.
We didn't need the feet shot, Damien. you don't need to tell us what you're into, my man.
Yeah, it's like, you know, she's like kind of getting up on her tiptoes to try to reach this book, and I guess that's the justification to show that she's really trying and can't reach it. But yeah, it definitely spins
just
a little.
Reaching and not getting there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So Victor hands her the book, and she's upset. You know, she's like, "Where were you? You just left me. Like, what happened?" And you know, he's like, "You know,
too
I'm sorry.
Adorable. Yeah, I couldn't just wake you up.
Yeah.
Say goodbye."
Right. And he's like, you know, yeah, I just left a little early, you know, and I just, but like, it looked to me like he actually left like in the middle of the night, right? Like,
right.
Here he's trying to imply like, oh, I just left like an hour before you did. I was just letting you sleep in.
Right. Don't get me wrong. He was probably doing some surgery because, you know, he couldn't just go to sleep without doing surgery on his monster.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of what I suspect was going on there. Yeah. But, you know, she, like, I think that, you know, being like, oh, you know, I had to get to work, but I was letting you sleep in, it softens her. She's like, okay. And they start kind of joking and flirting. And, you know, she was like, yeah, it's a good thing you didn't try to wake me up because I keep a knife under my pillow. And he's like, oh, I'll keep that in mind for next time. And, you know, she's like, oh, you think there's going to be a next time, huh? Like, you know, it's just, it's very bantery. It's kind of sweet or whatever.
Right. And not only that, but there's your other foreshadow, right?
Yes,
because
yes.
That's going to come in later.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
That's a surprise tool we're going to need for later.
But he's like, well, you know, since I hurt your feelings or whatever this morning, when can I see you again? Like, maybe, you know, I'll make it up to you. We'll go out tonight. And she agrees. And I think then we cut to Walton teaching. So, like, this feels like this university, it's both research and teaching for everyone.
Right. They have to pull double duty. That's how bad their funding is.
But it's funny. He's lecturing about Egyptian mythology.
Right.
And
specifically the story of Horus and how he avenged Osiris' death and became king of the gods.
Yeah. And one, he seems a little out of it. You know, I mean, we know he's kind of gotten possessed in some way by this mummy's power. But also he's keeps sort of like talking about these myths in like a present tense kind of way, like as if, you know, he has close personal, you know, experience with them and not just like academically so. But, you know, eventually it's like he ends up canceling class because he's just so like out of it. And as everyone's clearing out, there's like one girl who's kind of stayed behind. And I don't know if he said, I don't remember if he says her name or not, but like, he's like, hey,
it was Laura, but I think it's Lenora.
Okay. But he's like, can you meet me at my lab later tonight? I've got an internship opportunity that I think you'd be perfect for. And she's right. Like,
which,
okay.
Red flags.
Right. Yeah. Red I was flags. Like, if he was like, come by around 5, I'd be like, okay, that seems, things are closing up, but okay, sure. It's like right when you're finishing, but he's like, come by at 10 PM. No. That there's nothing good can happen in your old professor's lab at 10 p.m. Yeah.
By the way, I feel that Walton was a good guy before the possession. I feel this is only the influence of the mummy, obviously.
Yeah.
But also he gets punished for this later, so I don't know what that means other than maybe right. He's dead to begin with. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, she should get the fuck out of there. And
yes,
not,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And so from there we go to Victor in his lab. he's doing the classic, like, talking to a tape recorder, dictating his notes. He's come up with, like, the serum that he thinks is the final piece of the puzzle. It's going to cause full body reanimation.
Yeah. Legitimately, though, like, I gotta say, good on Damien once again, because I didn't see the recorder coming back. Because I'm just so used to it being a narrative device, right?
Yeah, it's usually just like, hey, we need this. You know, if they're just writing in a journal, it's not exciting. But if they're talking in a tape recorder, it gives them an opportunity to kind of give a bunch of lore with, like, an organic way that makes sense why they would just be just talking out loud all this stuff. But, yes, like you said, it's pretty great how it does end up coming back at the end. But I think then Carter shows up. He is just being creepy as usual. He asks a bunch of, like, pervy questions about, like, have you gotten in her pants yet? All this kind of stuff.
Right.
And then he's like, I got what you asked for. And he pulls out, like, this big Ziploc bag with a brain in it.
Just like a bunch of drugs. He just, like, flops down the baggie full of brain.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I know we agreed on $5,000, but I think I'm going to up the price. This is going to be $30,000 for this brain.
Right. And I love how Victor's slow on the uptake, and then he's like, wait, are you extorting me?
Right.
Yeah, and that's what he's doing.
Yeah, Carter's like, yeah, you know, it's... we'll say $5,000 for the brain and then another $25,000 for my silence. And Victor's like, what do you mean your silence? And he's like, well, I know about a murder now. And Victor's like, I thought this was like a brain from the lab. You weren't supposed to kill someone. And Carter's like, you said you wanted it fresh. So I got fresh.
You couldn't get much fresher than that, right?
Right.
Also, we get Chekhov's lighter and the foreshadowing of, hey, if you do that around here, it could cause the whole lab to go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, I do appreciate Damien for one thing in this movie. Like, he doesn't leave anything just hanging. Mm-hmm. He will always return.
Yeah.
No matter how small.
Yeah, I mean, this, like, the plot here is, it's a really tight, well-oiled machine. Everything is there for a reason.
He could just cut some of it. That's all.
Yeah. Just fine tuning it would have really made the, because it's almost 2 hours. Like, it's on the slightly long side, and yeah, I mean, it could have easily been trimmed down and been, like, super breezy and just felt like it was just going so fast the whole way through. Yeah.
Yeah, and most of it is just tracking. That you literally follow everyone through the structures as they move along.
Yeah. So as they're, like, you know, they're kind of arguing about this, and then Carter sees there's, like, a sheet, like a burlap kind of thing, that's, like, something's moving under
it. Moving, yeah. What could that be?
Yeah, he pulls it back, and there's just a living hand, like, not, you know, an arm kind of not attached to anything else, but
moving.
He
has the most reasonable expression that anyone would have at this time, and that would be, what the fuck?
Yeah. And as he kind of, like, staggers back, freaked out by that, Victor grabs, like, a vial of some kind of chemical and splashes it in Carter's face.
Because he threatened Victor with a knife. He's like, I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to cut you, at least.
Yeah.
If you're not going to pay.
Yeah. And so then Victor has, like, a scalpel. He starts, like, trying to attack Carter. And then Carter drops his knife, which Victor then picks up, and ends up stabbing and killing Carter in the process.
Well, it's a goof, really, because, like, Victor gets knocked to the floor. He grabs the knife and puts it up to, like, his chest, like he's going to try and stab Carter. And Carter slips and falls on the knife.
Yeah. So Victor, like, kind of rolls him off of him and gets up and then sees that the brain in the Ziploc bag, surprise, surprise, got crushed in the process and is ruined.
Oh, no. Poor Bill.
But there's just a brand new, even fresher brain right here.
Come on.
It's
still warm.
So we get a little bit of a montage of Victor kind of continuing stuff, getting everything ready for the final steps of the experiment. And
this is when I noted, it's like, holy shit, man. We don't have to be here for all of this. Mm-hmm. Like, you can just show us parts of this. and Wolverine.
Yeah, this is definitely like, you know, Damien Leone is good with special effects, so he's going to spend some time with some, you know, gross creature effect stuff here.
Yeah. And they are good effects for
it. Yeah. Yeah, they just, like you said, like they could have just tightened it up a little bit and it wouldn't have felt quite so long. He ultimately, you know, he like electrocutes the creation. It doesn't seem to work. He starts doing like the, you know, the angry CPR, like punching the chest, trying to wake it up and everything. Eventually there's like, oh, you know, alarms going, you know, things don't seem to be going well.
Yeah. Everything's breaking down in the lab.
Mm-hmm. And then we cut to Nyla, who, you know, is expecting to go on the date, and she's just by herself, staring at her phone, waiting on Victor, very upset.
Realizes it's 9:40 p.m. and he's probably not coming.
Yeah.
So she just starts taking off her jewelry, her earrings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we go back to Walton and his lab, where Lenora, the student, comes in and...
Who actually shows up.
Yeah. And, like, she just walks into the lab and doesn't see anybody, but then there's the mummy. And so she's, like, going over to look at it, and then...
Right. Walton does his signature jump scare again.
Right.
That you see coming. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, right away, like, this is super creepy. He's, like, he's just too close to her.
Right. He's like, you should be a member of my team. I'm only allowed to have three of us here. Now, I will say, though, the actress seems like she's really into either it's the actress or the character that's really into Walton. Like, she's staring at him pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of weird tension in this scene.
So maybe she knew what was... She's like, oh, I know what's going to happen here. I'm going to get my career advanced is what's going to happen.
Yeah, and because it's like he's like, you know, you can touch the mummy, it's fine. And like he takes
her hand
and like puts her hand on the mummy.
Yeah, and she just doesn't peace out right then, right there.
Yeah, and she's like,
she's got to be into it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know. Sometimes you're in these situations and it's scary, and you just like feel like I just go with the flow. It'll be better than trying to fight. It's hard to say what her, but she definitely at this point does kind of redirect. She's like, you asked me here about an internship. What's the internship story? Let's get back on track with that.
Now, normally I would be calling Walton a piece of shit, but once again, I think this is just because he's possessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, the internship, we're going to do an autopsy. We're going to get to like really see what's inside this mummy, and I need a team to help me. And she's like, oh, yeah, that sounds amazing. I would love to do that. Like that, you know, of course, who wouldn't jump at a chance to, like, you know, do a mummy autopsy? I would do that. That sounds great. But then he kind of starts talking about Egyptian mythology and history again. And
well, specifically the mummy, when he was alive, he was like a tyrant and a usurper. He killed his brother and his father and took over.
Yeah, and so this is why he was eventually tortured and mummified and cursed. It starts where he's, like, talking all, you know, like, this is all theoretical, this thing from the past. But by the end of the thing, it sounds, again, like he's, like, he has firsthand knowledge. Like, he was there for this. This happened to him, basically. And as, like, she's kind of, like, getting tense hearing this story, behind her, the mummy wakes up and grabs her.
Tears her heart out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Rips out her heart and just starts eating it. And then he like holds it out and like offers it to Walton to like
Walton's kind of like, but he tears a piece off for him and he's like, you're gonna eat this heart.
And then the mummy like starts, or he talks, he like speaks, you know, presumably Egyptian, I'm not sure.
Ancient Egyptian,
and it's like subtitled, but he's like demanding that Walton get Nyla and bring her to him at once.
Right, because he thinks she's the kind of, basically the priestess or some type of, you know, someone who basically cursed him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she's the reincarnation.
Yeah, she's somehow responsible for his predicament.
Right.
And then we go back to Victor and his lab, who is cleaning up the mess of all his... He's got the rest of Carter's body that he just kind of pushes down like a drain in the floor.
Well, he cuts it up. I mean, obviously, he cuts it up first, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a little bit of that. So once again, special effects in action.
Yeah, and after he does that, he goes back to like the main lab area. And
hey, where's that mummy?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the monster, sorry.
Yeah, the monster is just gone. You know, he thought it didn't work, but clearly it did. He starts like walking around trying to figure out where it went, and the monster just like pops up behind him, grabs him. They end up, they're kind of like wrestling. It like the monster bites Victor's hand, and Victor like gets a like a chloroform rag and like ends up, you know, knocking right. the monster unconscious.
I love how quickly it works in movies, right?
Right, yeah.
Chloroform. Yeah. But we get the line. He says the thing.
Yes.
It's alive.
Yeah. Oh, and so yeah, then we go right from Victor's lab back to Walton's lab. Nyla is coming into work. She walks in.
Yeah, but there's some cops there.
Yeah, there's two cops talking to Walton. And they're like, "Why don't you wait outside? We'd like to talk to you here in a minute, but we need to do it separately. Police procedure, all that." So Nyla's goes outside, is just standing in the hallway. And then we go back to Victor again, who's now examining the unconscious creature who he has chained up.
Right. You know, as it wakes up, which that's got to be fucking terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
The creature definitely wants to fuck his shit up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really angry. It's very aggressive. And at first it's, you know, just kind of like incomprehensible, just, you know, growling and stuff. But then all of a sudden it, you know, in sort of like a scratchy grunt voice says water. And, you know, Victor is amazed, like, oh, wow, this, you know, it can talk like already. Mm-hmm. Like, so he gets a water bottle and hands it to the monster. While the monster's drinking, he goes and gets a little, like a elementary school chalkboard, you know, one of the little tiny ones.
Right. And he's like, please say cat. Now say dog.
Yeah.
Like he asked for water. There's more going on than just like a child's brain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's because he's like, so you can talk, but can you read? And the monster like is clearly like annoyed by this. And he like points and he's like, there's like a stack of textbooks and he's like, psychology. And then he points at the chloroform bottle. It says chloroform.
Well, Victor says, can you see something over to the side of that? What does it say? And the monster's like, motherfucker, chloroform, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's way beyond cat and dog. He mm-hmm. can read.
He can reason.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, he takes the chalkboard from Victor and takes the chalk and writes food. And Victor's like, oh, right. You can even write. Wow. And he's like, no, get me some fucking food. I'm not practicing here. I'm making a request.
Right. But by the way, I love that Victor's like he's treating it like his child, which is, once again, so a surprise. Most Victors don't do that. They just run away or faint. Mm-hmm. But he's butting up to this monster who has the brain of a guy who wanted to kill him just a few hours ago.
Right. Exactly.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Victor's like, okay, I'll see if I can find you some food. He leaves. And then we cut back to outside the lab where the cops have come outside to talk to Nyla now. And they're like, there's a student that went missing. Her friend said that the last thing she did was she went to visit Professor Walton after hours in his lab. Right. They were like, is that...
Something.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a normal thing? Does he do that often? And Nyla's like, no, I've never heard of him doing that before. And, you know, it's kind of like if you think of anything, here's our card, give us a call or whatever. And they leave. And then Nyla goes inside and is like, Professor, what is going on? What? They said something about an internship. We don't have an internship. What do you mean? And Walton's like, there's a grant. We're doing, there's something, you know, he's just really like dancing
around. Well, he feeds her the lie that he gave to Lenora, that he was, oh yes, the school gave me permission to hire three interns on to help me with our work.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, but I didn't hear about that. They didn't tell me that.
Yeah. And he's like, well, you know, they told me, I'm your boss. I told you. That's how it works.
Right. Yeah. By the way, the mummy has one eye open.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see its hand kind of move it. You know, we got to it's, you know, every Frankenstein movie, you need that scene of the moving hand. Here we just get it with a mummy instead of with the Frankenstein monster.
Right. And he's like, well, we did get the hand earlier, but, you know, we get multiple hands. But at this point, the Walton is like, hey, come here. I want to show you something with this mummy. And it's luring her over, right?
Yeah, trying to get her really close to it. And, you know, like, we know what's getting ready to happen. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, Nyla looks and sees that Walton's nose is just bleeding. And he's, like, completely oblivious. And she's like, something
seems... Well, he's also getting really... He's getting aggressive. He's like, get the fuck over here.
Yeah, and she's like, I gotta go. I'll see you later. And she just, like, takes off wisely, right. Gets out of there. Then we go to Victor, who has just arrived back at school. He's in the parking lot and bumps into William, the student we saw earlier. He's like, I just wanted to tell you, I'm, like, so inspired by your work. You know, your lecture.
Especially that new God.
Yeah.
New God section.
Yeah, I'm into the crazy mad scientist shit you're spinning. I want to talk more about that.
I want to be your Igor.
Yeah, pretty much. Victor's like, I gotta go. I'm in a hurry. And he's like, well, I did some research. I saw your work, some stuff about your work in Switzerland. I want to know, is that true?
Victor spins on his fucking heels and he's like, who the fuck told you that?
Yeah.
Right. I do like William's response of, well, there's the internet. All you have to do is search for that shit.
Yeah, and Victor's like, don't tell anyone, just you keep your mouth shut. You know, I can make things really difficult for you. Just stay out of my way, and don't say a word to anybody. And, you know, William's like, but I want to help. I want to be in on this. And Victor just takes off. He's not interested in this.
By the way, how shitty were the people performing Victor's background check? Or were they just as shady?
Right. This kid with Google found out all this shit that somehow the university doesn't know about.
Right. I don't believe it. I'm not buying it.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
But then we get a confrontation between Nyla and Victor because, hey, you stood me up. What the hell is up with that?
Yeah. And he's like, I'm sorry. You know, I know I fucked up. And, you know, she's like, yeah, you know, you got what you wanted. Like, clearly you're just like a one night stand kind of guy. Basically, like, you're a fuck boy. I don't have time for you anymore. And Victor's like, I swear it's not like that. I don't want to lose you. Give me another chance. You know, I got caught up in my work. I couldn't get away. You know, and I don't want to lose you. And she's like, she's kind of stopped. She's going to hear him out at least. And then she's like, wait, what happened to your hand? Is that a bite mark? Where were you last night? Like,
right. And he's like, oh, I was doing work. Yeah. And she's like, all right, buddy, you're playing a game again. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, I can't tell you right now, but trust me. And yeah, she's like, no. So she gets in her car, drives off. And then while she's driving, she looks over and sees Victor walking through the woods by the side of the road. And she's like,
by the way, I love that the guy didn't even take 5 minutes to wait. He just immediately goes shady. The moment he can.
Right. And she's like, what the fuck is going on? So she, you know, pulls over, follows behind him, and sees him, like, go through the woods to this, you know, this abandoned factory. And, you know, she's obviously creeped out, but she's very curious. So she follows him into the factory.
This is so good. What, 5 minutes, though? Like, actually just following her through the factory?
Yeah, this is another scene where, like, we see that this is, like, a maze. Like, he goes in one entrance, and it's, like, he goes up some stairs, then back down some other stairs. It's a whole elaborate thing. I mean, I think this is a situation where, like, Damien Leone had access to a real creepy-ass factory and was like, production value, let's spend some time in here and show that this creepy space, you know, that we didn't have to build a set. It just looks good and creepy.
Right.
And ultimately,
I guess he's building atmosphere, but I feel like the atmosphere is already built.
Absolutely, yeah. And they could have built the atmosphere in a shorter amount of time. But you know, the end result, of course, is Victor gets back to his lab. He's got a sandwich now to offer the monster, and Nyla is peeking through like an open door, watching all this go on. And she manages to like actually sneak into the lab and like duck behind a table or something.
Right, till she kicks a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that doesn't set them off yet. They don't know she's there yet.
Yeah. She's watching, like, the monster is eating. He's making, you know, he's like, it's like a kid or a dog or something who's hungry. It's like the monster's eating too much and it's like getting sick. Victor's like, slow down, you haven't eaten in a while, you've got all these stitches and all this, like, you know, take it easy.
Yeah, I love the monster part. that's something.
Yeah. And then something ends up falling, like, that scares Nyla. She screams, you know, and she falls over, and, you know, Victor, of course, sees her at that point. And, you know, so he's chasing her. She's, like, running back through the factory. And he catches her and is like, he puts his hand over her mouth right away, which is never a good sign.
Also, they make it outside at this point, and he's pinning her against a fence. And that's when the other cop sees them, kind of. And he's like, what the fuck's going on over there?
Yeah. And, you know, he's like, just, I'll take my hand away. Just don't scream. Let me explain. I can tell you everything. And so she kind of nods, you know, and he's like, okay, so you saw that I created that from dead tissue. I've cheated death. You know, this is the thing I was saying, my dream of, like, you know, all the trauma from my mom, like, this is what I've been working towards, and it happened. It's a success. It's what I always wanted. And she's like, no, that was an abomination. You're crazy. You know, I can't, you know, I can't believe you've done this horrible thing.
Right.
And
so she's very understandably upset.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm going to run away. Like, you let me go or I'm going to scream. And he's like, right, fine. Now's not the time to push this any further.
But the sheer cojones on this man as she runs away, like, the audacity of this man going, don't tell anybody or don't say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just between us, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. I broke the laws of nature and God. And, right. Just keep it between us for now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we see back in the lab, the monster has broken free and is just kind of wandering around. Yeah.
Sorry. I'll leave it alone after this.
And he's like, you know, he's picking up chemicals, messing with stuff. He finds Victor's journal.
He gets a fucking knife.
Yes, yeah, he gets a knife. He's flipping through Victor's notes, seeing, like, you know, sketches of his creation, basically. And meanwhile, the cop that was watching all this, you know, watching the confrontation between Victor and Nyla, he goes into the factory and starts wandering around.
Yeah.
And then as the creature is reading the journal and looking at these drawings of, like, a monstrous figure,
sees himself in the mirror.
Yeah, you know, we gotta have that scene. So he's horrified by his monstrous appearance, smashes the mirror, smashes a bunch of stuff, and then he sees Carter's leather jacket laying on the ground, and he picks it up.
His lighter.
Yep. Pulls out a pack of cigarettes. It's like he has this really, like, fancy, like, silver cigarette case with, like, a lighter. He pulls out starts smoking. And then he hears the crackle of a walkie-talkie.
As the cop's trying to call in for backup, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the cop comes in and is walking around the lab, and it looks empty. And he's like, yeah, he's calling for help or whatever. And then the monster pops up behind him, attacks him, and just beats the shit out of him. Like, it's really brutal. Like, throws him on the ground, is just, like, pounding his chest. Right. Like,
does he tear his rib cage out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rips his abdomen, like, starts pulling out, like, guts, grabs his jaw, and just rips off, like, the lower half of his face.
You know, Damien must have been proud of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, this part, like, it looks good. It's gross and effective, and, yeah, I mean, it's just really visceral and brutal, which, you know, we don't get, like, Frankenstein movies tend to have gore in the rebuilding of the monster phase. Right. But, like, I think that, you know, we don't often see, like, the brutality that the monster is capable of in this way. And this felt very physical and real. And it was just like, oh, man, this is a powerful. He just ripped this jaw off with his bare hands. So it felt like the horror that's there is something we don't often see with Frankenstein. And I appreciated that. Like, I feel like it made it more real.
Right. Then we get this wonderful conversation where Victor comes in, and the monster is in Carter's jacket, smoking a ciggy. Mm. And he's like, so here's what we're going to do, Doc.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I'm in for it. I love me a scumbag monster. Let's go.
Yeah, and Victor's like, Carter, like, of course, you put the brain in there. You know what's up. But he's like surprised that it is Carter now. And then he just like, the monster kind of like lunges, and then we just cut to black. So I think then like we cut to black, and then the next thing we see is just Victor waking up chained to the pipe that, or it's a different pipe than the monster was chained to, but you know, basically they have switched places at this point.
Right. And the monster's still smoking. It's like, hey, so I don't, you know, I like that I'm strong now, but I would also like to not be ugly. So I want you to put my brain in another body.
Yeah, I want a young, healthy body. I don't want to be a rotting corpse. And Victor's like, but I can't just kill somebody. And he's like, you killed me?
You killed me. that was the best.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, that was different. Was it, Victor? Was it?
Yeah, Victor's like, yeah, Victor's like, but you were threatening me. And he's like, yeah, well, I'm threatening you again right now. You're going to do it.
Right. So, because, you know, if you don't, I've noticed that you're really sweet on that doctor lady. So some bad stuff could happen to her. And, you know, he's a scumbag. Mm-hmm. So there's the implication.
It's definitely similar to, like, you know, the original Bride of Frankenstein, where the monster's like, yeah, I'm just going to capture your fiance and lock her up until you do the thing that I want. In this case, new body instead of bride, but, you know, basic.
I feel like Carter is implying more than just locking her up.
Yeah. I think, it's definitely like you have a short window of time and things are going to get progressively worse. And, he's definitely, you know, Carter's, like you said, he's a scumbag. You don't want him to have access to Nyla for, you know, any amount of time. And also the implication also is that, you know, if you try to fuck me over and, you know, do the surgery, but kill me, you're not going to know where Nyla is and she's just going to starve to death. So you have to actually go through with the procedure.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the monster's smart in this one. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Smarter than Victor, I would say, to a degree.
And again, this is, you know, to kind of like makes it a little bit more like Mary Shelley's novel than we often get. Like this is a monster who is capable of planning and plotting and, you know, taking revenge. I think, you know, obviously he's less, relatable.
Less sympathetic.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But, you know, there is something here where like he's not, just a grunting zombie like that's stumbling around. Like this is an actual intelligent being with wants and desires and the means to make those things happen. I think then he leaves. He's like, I'm gonna go capture Nyla right now, and you're chained up. You can think about that for a little bit while I'm gone. And you know, Victor is yelling like, don't do it, Carter, and all that. And you know, of course, he's
Carter don't give a shit.
So then we cut back to the school where the other cop, we had, you know,
the
two cops. the surviving cop is using a lockpick.
For now. Spoiler alert.
Right. He breaks into Walton's lab and, you know, sees the mummy and everything. And he just is like trying to search while no one's around. He finds a closet that's like, you know, the electrical stuff, you know. Like the maintenance closet kind of area. He goes in there and there are several dead bodies.
Yay!
Yeah, and so he's like, you know, shocked to find this, and as he like turns to like, you know, go out and do something about this, he's attacked by the mummy with the brain hook.
Pick. Yeah. So we told you it was coming back.
Yep, absolutely. Meanwhile, we go to Nyla, who is at home. She hears a knock at the door and is like, you know, it's night. She's like scared. She's like, who is it? And no one's answering.
She's like, Victor, it better be you, but you better say something.
Yeah. And then she gets a text and it's from Victor. And he's like, hey, it's me. Open up. And she's like, Victor? And no answer. She's like, something's fishy here. Why is he not like, talking?
I love how smart she is, though, because, like, in a lot of things, people would either just say, oh, yeah, I'm coming, and then open up the door and get got, but she's like, nah. I appreciate the buildup of the tension of, like, who's on the other side of the door? Could it be Victor?
Yeah.
We'll never know.
Yeah.
Well, we know.
So,
we
know. Right. But, yeah, so she's smart enough not to open the door, so she calls 911. And then while she's talking to the 911 operator, the power goes out in the house.
Right. And she's like, he cut the power.
Mm-hmm.
And the other voice on the other end is like, all right, so you've checked the front door. That's locked. Are there any other points of entry? You know, like, what is it, a back door or a window?
Right.
She realizes,
she's like,
oh, fuck.
Yeah. So,
I'll have the window open.
Yeah, so she runs upstairs to, like, deal with the windows or whatever. The monster is hiding in there. It like, attacks her. And, of course,
right,
because
but
it's Carter.
The scene is so good.
Yeah. He, like, throws her down on the bed and, you know, is instantly being the scumbag that he is. And, you know, he's kind of, like, sort of, like, delicately touching her face in a way that is, you know, really upsetting and gross. And says, you know, if you scream, I'll tear you to shreds.
By the way, trigger warning if we didn't already give that.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, like, we don't, there's implications here of what could be happening. But, you know, it's an upsetting scene because you know what's coming.
For sure. Right. And he does lick her face. So, I mean, there's that too.
Yeah. And she's crying throughout it. And, you know, he says some pretty fucked up things. It's upsetting and, like, demands that she kiss him and all this. But then...
It'd be really crazy if she had, something that was foreshadowed earlier under her pillow.
Right. So good. So, yep, she reaches under the pillow, pulls the knife out that she, you know, mentioned to Victor earlier, stabs the monster and is able to get away and, you know, starts running. But when she gets outside... She's grabbed by Professor Walton, who is also there, and, you know, is possessed by the
monster. He has one of those handy-dandy chloroform rags.
Right.
I'm sorry.
So, yeah, he knocks her unconscious and drags her to a car and then drives away. So, like, poor Nyla. Like, everybody's trying to kidnap her all at once. She just didn't have a chance. There's no way. So she ends up waking up... you know, back at the lab, and Walton is like, you know, you were right, the curse is real. And, you know, the mummy, I forget, they eventually do say with the mummies, like, okay, and she's like, you know, he believes that you're connected to the sorceress who trapped his soul in the body, and he wants revenge.
So you gotta break the spell and free his
soul. Mm-hmm. And Nyla's like, no, what are you, I am, you know, a modern person. Like, I have nothing to do with this curse or anything. She's just denying. And we get, throughout this scene, we just get little shots of Victor continuing to try to escape. But we mostly are kind of focused in on Nyla and Walton here. The mummy. Yeah. And he's just, you know, up walking around now. Like, there's no pretense of him acting like he's still, you know, dead mummy. She's obviously terrified, and he's like
he speaks to her in ancient Egypt. Then she fucking reverses it by like, yeah, I'm the lady who imprisoned your soul. So, and she's saying this in ancient Egyptian, or what this movie is passing off as ancient Egyptian.
Yeah.
So it's like, for a moment, I'm like, yo, is she? Like, that would be a hell of a twist.
It kind of seemed, because at first she's just like, I don't understand what he's saying. Tell him it's not me to tell, you know. Right. But then, yeah, she just starts talking in it, and it's like, it's, yeah. It felt like this really intense reveal. She's...
No, turns out it's just a bluff.
Yeah, that she's just knowledgeable enough in this language that she can speak it. She's like, if you release me, I'll undo the spell. You know, the gods have forgiven you. You've suffered enough. You know, Walton is like, you lie, you know, he's not buying it. And in the process, like, I think think the mummy has like this weird sacrificial knife that he's now threatening her with.
Yeah. And then she's like, listen, I'll do it, but you got to kill Walton.
Mm-hmm. And the mummy listens, like, this bluff is working. The mummy stabs Walton, cuts off his ears and his tongue.
And nose.
Yes, and then goes in to do the other parts that we were previously implied. And, like, while this is all going on, Nyla is, like, scared, and she's kind of, like, you know, pushed herself back into the corner, and then she sees a gun on the floor that the cop from earlier dropped in the commotion. So she picks up the gun, and you know, so she's
she dumps him into his brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, the mummy like starts walking towards her, and he's got something in his hands that he just squeezes and just like slimed. It's pretty clear that this is Walton's like dick and balls just being crushed in the mummy's hands. And yeah, like you said, empties the clip into the mummy pretty much, and starts running. And then we cut to Victor still trying to break out, and Nyla appears. She's there. Right. She's helping him. They like hug and apologize and everything. And then she fires the gun into the handcuffs, breaking him free.
Please don't. If you're ever in this situation, don't do that. You're going to get yourself killed.
Yeah. People do it in movies all the time, but yeah, it does not seem like the best way to handle that.
No, not at all.
But they start running out of the lab, but before they can get too far, they are stopped by the mummy, and Victor takes the gun from Nyla, which she's been pretty proficient with it so far. I don't know why he thinks he's going to do better. He shoots the mummy a bunch. Nothing happens. He ends up, I think the mummy like knocks Victor down and grabs Nyla to like drag her away.
Right. But that's when Carter shows up, and you know what we got? We got a monster fight.
Yes. Finally, you know, living up to its title, we get Frankenstein versus the mummy. And like the first thing they do to separate all of our characters is they smash through a wall. So now Frankenstein and the mummy are in one room, which gives, you know, Nyla and Victor a chance to kind of like help each other and kind of regroup.
And I fucking love how they both square up like they're in a fucking wrestling match. It's so good.
Yeah, the fight, I mean, it's good. Like, you know, it's a little over the top in that, like, it doesn't feel real, but it is cool. Like, it's just, it's fun to see Frankenstein and a mummy actually fighting each other.
Right. There is a lot of scenes where they just kind of pan in on one side and they make a slash and then they go to the other and kind of return.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We also see Nyla sitting next to Victor. She thinks he's dead. She's just crying and he's laying there like out cold. And then the end result from the monster fight, you know, after they've knocked each other around quite a bit, the Frankenstein
it's
monster.
It's a Mortal Kombat fatality.
Yeah, he rips off the mummy's arm and then rips out his still beating heart and crushes it.
But we're not done yet. We got one more step to go. He does the Hulk clap on the mummy's head. Just dust everywhere.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, hell yeah. I want this in a video game if there's not like, what is it, Terradrome is the one with the monsters?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it looks so good. They make you wait for it, but when it pays off, like this fight is super fun.
It is hype. Yep.
And so then once the mummy is defeated, the Frankenstein monster slash Carter walks back over to Nyla. And
I would
sees
say
her.
Saunters. He saunters.
Yeah, he's feeling pretty good, but then he sees that it looks like Victor's dead, and he's like, "Fuck!" Like that was my chance to get a new body. He's dead there. And you know, he's like, this is all your fault. Like, you messed this up for me. Now you're going to pay, you know, talking to Nyla.
More essay attempts.
Yeah. So he of course pushes her down, climbs up on top of her and like kind of, he's like hovering over her and he's like, look at this face and just remember, this is all Victor's fault. what's going to happen to you next is all because of Victor.
Right.
But meanwhile, Victor wakes up. He was not dead.
He was just mostly dead.
Yeah, and he picks up the Frankenstein monster earlier was carrying around. It's like
Carter fucking loves his knives. Because first off, he has like a chef's knife. Then he has the cleaver. The dude's packing.
Yeah, this is like a meat cleaver. Victor picks it up and, you know, gets close to Carter, and then he's like, Carter! And as the monster turns around, Victor
gets
just
fucking Voorheesed.
Yeah.
Just
right.
Clean, yes. Right in the dome.
Splits the head completely open. The monster falls over dead. And then Victor, from that exertion, he collapses. Nyla like crawls over to him. She's like, I thought you were dead. And he's like, well, I came back for you. But it's clear that this was a last little burst of energy. He is dying. And so he's like, you know, before I go, just destroy the lab, burn everything. No one can know what happened here. We can't let this happen again. Like, he's having this sort of like conscience at the end here that like what he's done was wrong, and he doesn't, you know, we sort of have this with the real Victor in the novel as well. Like, you know, I don't want my work recreated. And they tell each
he
other
just
that
takes
they
the death of his brother and Justine first in the book,
right? Yeah, but so they're, you know, they have this tearful goodbye. They say they love each other, all this, and she's crying as he like breathes his last breath. And then we just cut to later, Nyla dumping gas all around the lab.
See, I think it probably would have been pretty good if she actually just took his notebook and was like, well, I mean, I could bring Victor back.
That's because it was like, she throws a match, things start catching fire, and then she's holding Victor's journal, and she just stares at it for like a minute or what, and that's definitely what I thought was happening, was that she was going to be like, I'm going to hang on to this, but you know, she does throw it on the fire to let it burn up as well.
Rough.
And then we cut to just later, after the fire, you know, time has passed a little bit, and William is wandering around this abandoned factory and finds the journal.
It's like he knows something happened.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like, yeah, everybody knows that this fire happened, and he's like, I bet this is connected, so he sees the journal and he like picks it up, and it just kind of crumbles to ash. You know, it's so burnt up. But underneath
the
journal,
it's like a tease, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But then we see under the journal, there's the tape recorder, and it is fine. So he like presses play. We hear like him, you know, Victor saying a little bit, and then he hits the rewind button, and hits play again, and it's like the beginning of Victor. You know, and he's like.
Right.
Day
this,
one of the
this
experiment.
Discovery promises to change the world. And we go out, cut to black. Fucking great. Hell yes.
Yeah, and while when we get the recording, like the camera pans over and we see the classic like Frankenstein switch on the wall. So it's definitely like William's going to come back and do it all over again.
By the way, William, like William Frankenstein, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. And he's
definitely. Definitely a good, you know, use of that name as a reference there.
I feel like Damien's setting up a sequel.
Yeah. At this point, I feel like that sequel's not going to happen.
Not
but, you know, clearly, you know, after Terrifier and Terrifier 2, he likes his sequels. So if this had done better,
maybe,
we might have gotten something. But you never know.
Right. Maybe it'll be Frankenstein versus Dracula again or something like that. Or William Frankenstein.
Yeah, I would love to see what comes next in this. Like, I feel like this is it's surprisingly clever. Like we were saying, like it does drag on a bit at points, but like it's in terms of like plot and the way everything builds, it makes use of everything. You know, like having the mummy and the Frankenstein stories going parallel and the way they intersect, it all works. It makes sense.
No threads are left dangling. We touch everything that we say we will.
And there's all these little subtle things set up early that come back in really clever ways near the end. Yeah, it's a super fun movie. And like, you know, if you've are familiar with the Terrifier movies and enjoy them, like I you know, I didn't like the first Terrifier movie much. I thought it was a little bit too much. I thought the second one got more of a sense of humor about itself, and I enjoyed it more. This,
it
I feel like...
mean-spirited, but not as mean-spirited.
Yeah, yeah. But this doesn't have, like, it. You know, like, Carter is definitely a mean-spirited character, but, like, there's still heart to this. Like, not everyone is awful. And even, like, you know, Victor, who is somewhat a villain still... He's a complicated figure, you know. It's not all black and white. I think this movie actually is pretty successful as a Frankenstein movie, in terms of like actually interpreting the novel in a unique way that modernizes it but respects the original material in a way that we don't often see with Frankenstein movies, where it's just like we'll take this one kernel of, you know, reanimated corpse and then just do whatever we want with the rest of it.
There's got to be a brain. There's got to be a corpse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this one, it's a little, you know, I wouldn't say it's faithful to Mary Shelley's novel, but it's definitely more faithful to the spirit of it than a lot of other versions are.
Yes, definitely. And of course, how much more faithful can you get than Adam Mummy?
Right.
But yes, yeah. If you're going to have a monster, like, honestly, I don't think we saw versus Dracula versus the woman. We didn't see versus the mummy, right?
I think this is the first time that Frankenstein's monster and a mummy have faced off. I think this is unique to this one. When Universal started doing.
Before.
Yeah, Universal, when they started doing the Monster Rally movies, the mummy never seemed to get mixed in with those as. I don't know if that just didn't feel right or just it wasn't as popular or what, but
right.
You know, it was usually our you know, main trio of Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman.
They were like, listen, the mummy is not making a lot of money. We're going to go with our big three, you know?
Yeah.
Fair enough. But no, this was good. I mean, like I kept harping on, it may have lingered a little bit, but anything that it lingered on, it still, like, it used everything it had.
Absolutely.
No true waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's not, like, sometimes when a movie's too long, it's like, man, they really could have cut out this whole plot, and it still would have been, or it would have been better. This, it's more just, like, scenes could have been tightened up. It just could have, like, fine-tuned things a little bit. And I think that this is, you know, indicative of, like, a new director who's just wanting to tell you everything and make sure you know what's happening. He's holding your hand a little more than he needs to in terms of, like, oh, they walked from here to here and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that just belies he didn't exactly have confidence at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is your first movie, it makes sense.
Yeah, he's definitely more confident as a special effects guy than as a director. But he's still a decent director.
Like, if he wrote this all in one go, that's amazing. Because I feel like for this to be as coherent and have so much setup and payoff, like, you would have to write it through once, then write backwards, and then write forward one more time. Or he had a hell of an editor. Like,
yeah, to get all of those little things to come back and, you know, pay off. Yeah, just really well done.
Damn good story.
Absolutely.
Where can they find us?
So you can find us on all the socials at The Frankencast. You can email us at thefrankencast@gmail.com. You can also find us on YouTube. And, of course, you can find us at patreon.com/thefrankencast, where we're, you know, always getting up to new things. We just watched a not-so-great episode of Doctor Who recently. We're getting close to the end of the first season of The Munsters Today. You know, we're having a good time over there, as always, and we'd love to have you.
Absolutely. Oh, we already advertised Steel and Lace, didn't we?
Yeah. So before our little detour, we already kind of mentioned that we're actually going to get back to, as promised, we're going to talk about Steel and Lace next week. We teased it earlier as a little bit of a red herring, but we actually are going to talk about Steel and Lace. It's really going to happen.
Yeah, that one's not something we're just not going to do.
Right.
All right. So you know where we're going with next week. Anything else to say, Anthony?
I think that's it.
Don't look now, but your family's dead. Just kidding. And to be continued.
Looks like you survived another episode. The podcast is a production of FCR Media. It's hosted by Anthony Bowman and Eric Velasquez. Follow us on Twitter at TheFrankenCast or send us a letter at TheFrankenCast@gmail.com. Our cover art is by Amanda Keller. You can find her at Keller Illustrations on Instagram. Our theme music is by Vivek Abhishek. Thanks for listening.